Today, if you not only want to learn more about attachment theory, but also have some very direct, practical tools to close that gap in your relationship, stay tuned. We're interviewing an expert, Thais Gibson.
Hello, all, and welcome to the Relationship Renovation Podcast. I am Tara Kerwin.
And my name is EJ Kerwin, and we are super excited to welcome Thais Gibson to the podcast today. Thais is a leading expert in attachment theory, and she's the founder of the Personal Development School, where she's helped millions of people better understand their patterns in relationships. In this conversation, we're going to explore how attachment, emotional safety, and nervous system responses shape connection. Welcome, Thais.
Before we started recording, we were talking like a lot of our audience loves the idea of like, oh my gosh, we can still get to secure attachment from like this place of like avoidance or anxiety. And we're like, yes. And now we have an expert in the field to talk about it. But I do think like before we go there, what made you do what you're doing?
Oh my gosh. I mean, how long do we have? To be honest, I grew up in just a home where there was a lot of chaos, a lot of ups and downs, a lot of fighting, a lot of just tough things I saw at a young age. And the very long story is just that I think I internalized it all as a child and really kind of sponged it all up. And I was the eldest of two kids and really kind of took the brunt of a lot of being in the middle. And I ended up being a fearful, avoidant attachment style. But actually more than that, I ended up having a knee surgery. Soccer was like my coping mechanism growing up. And all I wanted was to get like a D1 soccer scholarship as a kid and leave Canada and go to the US and kind of like get away from it all. And had a bad knee surgery in one of my scouting years and just became immediately addicted to opioids after they were prescribed to me and went through like a 6-year struggle with sort of daily opioid use and tried inpatient rehab and outpatient rehab. And you know, I did go to university and get a soccer scholarship. And I was like, just hanging on by a thread on the inside. Like my life was just like chaos and a mess. And I would go to rehab in the summers and nothing was really working so well for me. And then somebody said to me at pretty much a rock bottom time of my life, your conscious mind can't outwill or overpower your subconscious mind. And I think one of the hardest parts, at least for me in being an active addiction, was all the times you're like, I'm going to get clean. I'm going to change my life. I'm going to delete people's numbers from my phone. And I would tell myself all these things that I was going to do. And I would just always fail and always go back to the same patterns. And I think that there was like a special kind of torment in that for me, like a special kind of like helplessness to myself. And so when I heard somebody say that, it was like so relieving. It was like, so this part of me that can't seem to like change, it's not because I'm weak or incapable or not good enough. It's because the subconscious part of me wants to numb. And the conscious part of me is the part of me saying, okay, get sober, change your life, get back on track.
Yeah.
And so I got really obsessed with learning about the subconscious mind. And there's still lots of ups and downs on the journey from that point forward, but eventually through, you know, doing AA programs and NA and a lot of good resources for myself, but honestly really learning how the subconscious mind worked and how to rewire and what was happening there for me, I got sober and it was like extremely life-changing. And I got really interested first before I even went into the relationship space about like, what is our conditioning? How does our conditioning affect us? How does our subconscious mind work? And I did 13 certifications and everything from like hypnotherapy to neurolinguistic programming to CBT to somatic experiencing, like really got interested in just all of that stuff and nerded out and just honestly became like addicted to learning about all of that as my next coping mechanism for a while. And then, it came full circle. And to sort of finish the story, I guess I was so amazed at how helpful it was for me. And I couldn't believe, I mean, I'm 35 now, and this was like, I got sober at 20 years old, 20 and a half years old. And so it's been a long time, but I just, at around 21, I was like, why is nobody talking about the subconscious mind, right? Like 14 years ago or however long ago, nobody cared, right? Like nobody was talking about the subconscious mind as much of a mainstream way. And so I would just go out and give these free workshops to people and be like, hey, like, everybody needs to learn about the subconscious mind because it was so life-changing. I just wanted to share it with people. And that led to all these people being like, oh, do you see clients? And I'd be like, I'm still in school. I'm 21 years old. And people would be like, we don't care. We love the workshop. Let's like, you know, take us as clients. And so I started accidentally my practice, working with people about 14 years ago. And that turned into like a 2-year wait list. And then eventually tried to package stuff and put it online for people who were on the wait list, which then turned into our personal development school programs. And that was kind of the way everything sort of unfolded.
You're freaking amazing. You're awesome that you did this from like, I mean, right? Same story with EJ and I. We created this couples counseling center in our podcast based on like our complete meltdown as a couple. And then like saying we have to like help others, but we have to help ourselves first. And I just love that you took your suffering, healed it. And then now you're impacting like millions of people. And I have to share something with, I just connected this dot. Do you have a free attachment quiz style on your website?
She does. I took it last night.
Her QR code is in my R&R at home and in-office manual for people to do their attachment style quizzes when we're going through their genograms and timelines.
Oh, nice.
I just put that together. Sorry.
Well, thank you.
That's amazing. It's my favorite one. I've gone through so many different ones. I'm like, this is the one we have to use. Okay.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that.
When you were telling your story around addiction, I was just thinking like just how applicable that is to couples and how they fall over and over again into patterns, whether it's in relationship to relationship or just in their primary relationship. And then they feel like shit about it, like over and over and over again. Like, oh my God, we were gonna communicate in healthy ways. We were gonna make each other a priority. And they just keep falling unconsciously into these patterns.
Exactly. And that's why I got so obsessed with doing all this. And that's actually what, so when I started doing a lot of like inner work, I started by doing a lot of core wound and trigger rewiring. So a lot of like, I'll be abandoned, I'll be betrayed, I'll be trapped, all these like wounds that we acquire from childhood. And I took like what I was learning in cognitive behavioral therapy that way, but then how do we actually drive that down to the subconscious and even unconscious mind? And learning about like rewiring and neuroplasticity and how to actually change those things more permanently rather than think through them and cognitive reframe them when they come up, right? And so that was initially a lot of the work that I did. And then learning your needs and how to meet your own needs and how to self-soothe accordingly, how to regulate your nervous system. That was actually the work I did at the beginning. And then what was so funny is a couple years into doing that work, I met my husband. So about 11 years ago, and I thought I was like so healed. I was like, oh, I'm so healed. I come such a long way. And then, you know, but I was also really single. I was coming out of being in an active addiction. I felt all this peace on my own, but I hadn't actually been in like a serious relationship yet.
Right.
And when I started, you know, things got more serious with him. I was like, ooh, I still have these kind of themes here that are interesting where I retreat instead of speaking up, or I don't share my needs, or my boundaries are a little bit porous. Like I, you know, didn't have the best boundaries. And I realized that like, oh, interesting. I've been doing all this work here around like rewiring your triggers, regulating your nervous system, learning to self-soothe through knowing your needs and meeting your needs. And I was working with people on that, but I hadn't done any work on like, how do you have boundaries in a relationship? How do you communicate in healthier ways and speak your needs vulnerably? How do you end up in a situation where you have healthier coping mechanisms and behaviors in relationships rather than retreating or stonewalling, actually speaking up and opening up? So I got really into then working on those things in my relationship with my now husband and then started sharing them with clients. And that's actually how I got into the relationship space because of exactly what you're saying, which is that I realized it was just following a similar thread where you say you're going to do one thing. Oh, I'm going to be more vulnerable, but then you shut down. Or I say I'm going to stop retreating from something, but I do it anyways. Or for some people, it's okay. They say they're going to stop raising their voice, but they go back in the heat of the moment. And so my body of work is very much about not just intellectualizing and understanding these things because there's a lot of information out there on the internet, but like how do you take all of these themes and patterns and actually apply them at a subconscious level so that you're actually rewiring? And as we actually start to change that, then your set point, your baseline changes. And so funnily enough, I revisited attachment styles at that point. You know, I learned it in like first year university at a high level. And then, and then it's very high level. It's like, oh, the temperaments of how you're going to develop in childhood and things like that. And I've been doing this work on these original pillars, like the wounds, the needs, the nervous system, the boundaries, the communication, the behaviors, these six pillars. And I realized, oh my goodness, if you tell me your attachment style, if I know somebody's attachment style and assess it for them, I already know what triggers and wounds they're going to have. You know, the anxious attachment styles are more like abandoned, alone, excluded, disliked, rejected, unlovable. Dismissives are like trapped, engulfed, helpless, powerless, defective, or shameful. Weak if they're too vulnerable, and fearful avoidance really had both sides, but also this big betrayal wound. And then each one has specific needs. if you tell me your attachment style, okay, I know that anxious attachment styles are going to have more needs related to validation, reassurance, certainty, being a priority. Yeah. Dismissible avoidance are going to have needs more related to autonomy, independence, understanding, acceptance. And so what was so crazy is I was doing all this work with people, and as soon as I learned their attachments, I was like, oh, this just fast tracks the work. Like, I just know their profile by what core wounds they're going to have, what needs they're going to have, how their nervous system is going to respond and react when they perceive danger, and what boundary patterns they're going to have. Like, anxious attachment styles struggle with boundaries. Dismissive avoidance have too extreme of boundaries and have to work on compromising. Fearful avoidance are like boundaryless until you're angry, and then you set extreme boundaries and then go back to feeling guilty and boundaryless again. And so you can see all these themes play out. And so that's where we created this body of work called integrated attachment theory, which is like the neuroscience of how to rewire your attachment style by understanding what your profile is on these pillars, and then how to engage your subconscious and at times unconscious mind to actually recondition.
That's what I really want to know. But I love that you did that fast tracking. So like, right, we have a counseling center in Tucson, and couples come in crisis mode. And one of the first things we do before we do anything, sometimes before we even do goals, is we go into their entire genogram, individual timeline, relationship timeline, and attachment to identify all of that first, so then they can at least have compassion for each other, that the person's not trying to just make them crazy and they're not just hating on the other person. Because when you sink into just like understanding your partner's a human too, that has probably been suffering for a long time, just the suffering looks different than yours. Yeah. And so I just can really relate to like, we do that one of the, and they're like, no, we just want to talk about the infidelity. I'm like, yeah, you won't hear it differently. We have to go to those wounds first and then go ahead.
I mean, I think one of the things that's, you know, cause you were talking about like the unconscious, and then instead of just dealing with the conscious, right? And so that's one step. But then in couples work, it's like then the relationship, right? And it's like two steps away from what's really driving everything. Because so many couples, when they come in, they're suffering and acting out in ways consciously and unconsciously, but they're convinced it's just the other person. Like, you know, if you would just stop doing that, if he would just stop doing that, then I'd be okay. And it's like stepping them all the way back to like, no, actually, like, even though you love this person and you were crazy about them at one point, they are triggering all of these unconscious adaptive traits, adaptive behaviors. And so actually, this partner who's driving you absolutely insane is your greatest teacher. You know, they're going to be the ones who help you get over that, because they're going to highlight your pain.
100%. I relate so much to what you're saying, both of you, because so I don't run my practice anymore because we're all online. But when I did, I would get couples to come in, and we'd go through this like a discovery day. And the first couple sessions would just be discovery. And we'd actually go through these six pillars. Like, what are these big core wounds and triggers? Where do they come from? And I'd get them to say that in front of their partner so that their partner had context for these things differently.
Yes.
And we go through all these different themes and patterns, because I think to your point, like, it's hard to empathize with somebody when we can't understand them. But when we understand them, empathy is that natural next step. And so a lot of times, by getting that understanding and seeing their history and a lot of those things, you'd see that thread all the way through. And then to your point too, EJ, what I thought was really beautiful is that, you know, these themes that come up. Like, I remember really early on into working with clients, like years and years ago, I remember sitting one day and there was this couple, and they came into my office. And it was a husband and wife, and the wife was talking about how the clothes were always on the floor. And as she was talking about this story, I remember looking, and her hands were shaking, and they were shaking with like rage. And I remember kind of being taken aback, going, is she that angry about the clothes on the floor? And as she started getting really mad, her husband started getting really sort of sad. You could see his body language shift and change and kind of bowl over. And I was sitting there going, like, there's no way that she's like 9 or 10 out of 10 angry, and he's like an 8 out of 10 distraught over clothes on the floor. Like what's going on here?
What's really going on?
And when I asked him, I was like, okay, well, what do you make it mean about you when the clothes are on the floor? And she was like, well, that he doesn't respect me, that my own husband doesn't respect me. And she had this huge disrespect core wound from her father growing up and from her older brothers and having interpreted and perceived and stored that way. And then for him, I was like, and what do you make it mean when she starts to get frustrated? And he's like, I feel like she doesn't love me. She doesn't see all the things that I try to do and all the ways I am showing up. And I just feel like it's so discounted. And so it's not like ever really that conscious, objective situation. It's like the subconscious meaning we give to situations and project onto them that's actually the source of the problem. And so I just, I really agree with what you said.
And there's to 99.9% of the couple's population right there, right? They get tripped up in that content. They don't understand the process of it all. And then they end up in couples counseling, like pointing the fingers at each other. And I want to hear what you were going to say. And then just really the steps you really start to help individuals, couples to like drop into the subconscious unconscious, if that feels okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I was just going to say, and then it's funny because then the laundry gets picked up and the problem's not over, right? Like the laundry's picked up and the wife's still mad. And
it's so not about the laundry.
So you'll see just how often we argue about things and it's really not about those like surface things themselves. But so how do we go into it? So one of the big things I use to sort of differentiate the subconscious and unconscious is like your subconscious mind is where you can retrieve information from. So we can look and we can say, just for listeners who are not familiar, we can say, okay, you know what? I feel this feeling in my body. I feel not good enough. That's what it feels like. Okay, you know what? When I was 8 years old, I did have an experience that made me feel like this. Whereas our unconscious mind, it's much harder to retrieve information from unless we're kind of like in a state of hypnosis or there's some sort of extraneous circumstances. So you might be like, oh, I feel adverse to peanut butter. And you don't know why. You just know that you do. But maybe at 3 years old, your older brother forced you to eat a jar of peanut butter and you got sick, but you don't recollect it, right? So, I'll say mostly in like subconscious territory. Unconscious, we'll get into if somebody has like a really early childhood wound. There's different rewiring that's necessary for unconscious wounds. Like, I'll come back to that just because you said sub and unconscious. So we'll start with that first piece, I guess. So the first thing is we go through those six pillars. So we go through like the core wounds, the needs, the nervous system function, boundaries, communication, behaviors. And we look at our patterns, but then it's like, okay, we don't want to just intellectualize, we want to rewire them. So this is like my favorite thing in the world. And the first, I can actually give maybe a tip or like a tool to start if that's interesting for your listener.
Sure, absolutely.
Love it.
Okay, cool. So the first thing is like we find our wounds. So according to your attachment style, you'll generally have specific wounds. For anxious attachment styles, the big ones are I'll be disliked, rejected, excluded, unloved, unsafe if somebody pulls away from me, not good enough, alone, abandoned. Those are the big, big core wounds and fears. And you'll generally see like anxious attachment styles. I know you guys know this probably inside out, but for anybody who's less familiar, they cling, they call a lot, they text a lot when they feel pulled away from. They have a really hard time when somebody's not calling or texting them back, sitting in that. There's a lot of that abandonment anxiety, and their strategy is to maintain proximity as much as they can.
Yep.
Dismissive avoidance, their big core wounds in relationships are around being trapped or engulfed, shameful if they're really deeply seen. They have this deep, because of childhood emotional neglect, like I'm defective core wound, I'm fundamentally broken kind of idea. I'll be weak if I open up, I'm not good enough, I'm helpless, powerless if I'm in a position where I have to deal with anything out of my control. So those are a lot of their big core wounds. And then fearful wouldn't share in a lot of the anxious and avoidant side because they have both sides. So their attachment style, so they'll still have the abandonment, a lot of like, I am alone, I have to do it all myself kind of core wounding, fear of being trapped, helpless, powerless, big time for fearful avoidance.
Yeah.
And then also this big betrayal wound, not really trusting the future or other people or things like that. So first step is like we source people's wounds on that first pillar. And when they start to see, okay, yeah, that wound really resonates with me, that comes up a lot for me, I get triggered frequently by that. Well, we want to actually rewire it. You're not born with these wounds. They get conditioned into you through repetition and emotion over time. Yeah. It fires and wires these neural networks and we can change them. And how we change them is I'm not a believer in affirmations. I know a lot of the world is like affirmations, but like your conscious mind speaks language. Your subconscious mind doesn't speak language pretty much at all. Your subconscious mind speaks in emotions and imagery. So when you try to change a core wound, let's say the wound is I'm not good enough, and you say I am good enough, I am good enough, I am good enough, you're just speaking language, which means your conscious mind is speaking to your conscious mind. The wound exists at a subconscious level, and you can see this, right? Like if I say to both of you, okay, whatever you do, do not think of a pink elephant, like probably your mind flashes an image of a pink elephant. Your conscious mind hears do not, but your subconscious just flashes images, right? And we see that sort of image piece. So we have to take the understanding of how our subconscious works, and we have to take our conscious mind and drive what we're trying to create into neural pathways that eventually build neural networks at a subconscious level. And there's three steps. Step one, source your core wound and its opposite. I'm not good enough. I am good enough. Okay. Step two, we need 10 pieces of memories of times we felt good enough. Mm. Why do we use memory? Because all memory is a container for emotions and imagery. So if you think of your favorite childhood memory and you're playing on the beach with your family, you see the images of the ocean. And we've all seen people when they recount old memories, they smile or they laugh or their body language changes.
Yeah.
So what we're doing is we're getting emotions and imagery and we're using 10 of them to create repetition. So now we think of 10 times we felt good enough. Maybe last week I was a really good friend. Maybe 2 weeks ago somebody says, oh, you know what? I showed up and had a hard conversation with my boss. And in recounting those memories, we see the images, we feel the emotion. Okay. So now we're using our conscious mind to speak to our subconscious mind. And we're getting the repetition to fire and wire those neural pathways.
Love it.
Step three is we record it down, ourselves saying it out loud, like into our phones or somewhere we can listen back. And ideally, we listen back in what's called a suggestible state, which is when our brain is producing more alpha or theta brainwaves. First hour that we wake up, last hour before we go to bed, after meditation or intense exercise, when our mind is more still. And that's when we're really suggestible. And so now what we're doing is when we listen back, we're trying to feel about it and visualize it as much as possible, those pieces of evidence that we have. And we're wiring in these new concepts at a subconscious level. For subconscious wounds, we want at least a 21-day cycle. For unconscious wounds, so to go back to what you originally said,
yeah.
For the unconscious mind, neuroscience tells us we need about 63 days.
Oh, but did you write down these numbers, EJ?
I'm not writing down the numbers.
Okay. 2163.
Yeah. And so subconscious would be things that are like painful, hard, but we can kind of remember the context for them and where they came from. Unconscious would be a lot of things like if somebody was abandoned as a child because they were adopted. You know, these things we can't retrieve and remember.
Yeah.
But obviously at a young age, we're deeply imprinted by that type of conditioning, especially because from 0 to 3 and then 3 to 8, those are the times where most of our conditioning runs the deepest in those segments.
Yeah.
Could I really quick just, is this a good example just so I can make sure my little brain is connecting? So let's just say if the unconscious wound is I'm not safe. And then you kind of get in and you're identifying, okay, I am safe. And times I felt safe, even like in the last 2 weeks or this, is that kind of like the subconscious versus unconscious?
Exactly. Yes.
Awesome. Okay.
And unconscious would be like you walk through your days frequently feeling extremely dysregulated. You feel like you're in sympathetic nervous system. You have no context for why. You can't really think of when it started. You don't really know what's going on. And like that kind of thing, if we've always felt like that since we can remember, and we've always struggled with chronic anxiety in that kind of way, and we have no source, we don't know when it began, we can retrieve the subconscious part of it, which is like, yeah, I felt like that for a long time. I can remember feeling like that in childhood. But the unconscious would be like, I felt like that since I was a kid and before I can remember. Yeah. And so there might have been a deeper imprinting experience at that point in time.
Yeah, the thing that came up for me is just how interesting it is, like how many times in your relationship these unconscious beliefs are validated over and over and over and over by your partner. You know, like that avoidant partner who feels like they always get it wrong. How many times their anxious partner says things or acts in ways that validate the unconscious belief. And it's like you're almost like digging a hole that the dirt is filling back in, you know, that by doing these exercises of like, okay, here's all these times I feel like I actually got it right or I was enough. When you're also on a daily basis internalizing, well, these are all the ways my partner doesn't think I'm enough and thinks I'm fundamentally, or at least acts in a way that makes me feel like I'm not lovable.
And I think you're saying something really meaningful, which is that our mind also perceives according to our beliefs. So we all have this mechanism, I'm sure you know of it, is the reticular activating system or RAS. And people always talk about it in the form of like, if you were going to buy a red car and it's a red Jeep and now you're thinking about buying a red car, you see the red car everywhere when you're driving around.
Yeah.
Like that's the RAS, is your filtering system. But actually like what's really meaningful about that is our RAS filters information according to what we believe. So if we believe that we're not good enough or defective or whatever the core wound is, it's coming up for somebody, our partner could be snappy because they didn't sleep well and they're
overtired.
Something
completely different. Yeah.
And we go, I'm defective. And they think this about me.
Yeah.
And so we reproject it. And I always give people the analogy that your core wounds are like a bear in the woods. Like if you go into the woods tomorrow and you see a bear and you run, and thank goodness you're safe, but you have to go back into the woods the very next day. The friggin' trees blow in the wind, and you're like, the bear is here.
Yeah.
And so we're always bracing for these core wounds, and we always reproject them back out. We have a negativity bias. We're wired that way from a biological perspective, so we can protect ourselves from perceived and stored threats. But what ends up happening is we go through life, we store these threats, we project them onto things, and our whole brain and body react. Our nervous system goes into fight or flight. And like, if you imagine somebody felt abandoned as a child and then somebody doesn't text them back for an hour, maybe that person loves them dearly and is just really preoccupied with something at work. And that anxiously attached individual is going, oh my gosh, they're leaving. They're bracing for the bear in the woods, right? It's like our core wounds are each our version of that bear in the woods that we reproject. And what's really interesting too is core beliefs produce patterns of thought. So I always give the analogy that your beliefs are like a tree trunk. If you believe you're not good enough and you go into a room full of people, you start thinking all these thoughts, which are like the tree branches coming off of the tree trunk. Oh, I'm not interesting enough. I'm not funny enough. I'm not, you know, attractive enough. I'm not. And we have all these thoughts. And then our emotions follow those thoughts in lots of cases and are like the tree leaves, right? They color our experience. And so we might feel insecure. Mm. And then neuroscience has actually proven, a neuroscientist named Antonio Damasio in 2004 actually proved that all of our actions we take are based on our emotional state. So even people who think they're very logical, rational thinkers are just quick to rationalize they make emotionally based decisions and then rationalize them through logic. So I give people the acronym BTEA, like your beliefs create thoughts, which create emotions, which create actions. And you can make a pretty strong argument that if you're not in charge of your beliefs, you're not in charge of your actions. And your emotions are made up of neurochemicals. If you have a lot of stressful thoughts, you have more cortisol. And then in turn, your nervous system reacts. And now you're in sympathetic nervous system mode. And there's this dysregulation or hyperarousal coming from those beliefs that are situated at a subconscious level first.
Our Relationship Renovation at Home Manual for Couples is now available on Amazon for $24.99. Check it out. It's going to be so helpful. It's going to be giving you all of the skills and tools we talk about on our podcast. So please go check it out. Your relationship is so worth this.
I think that that's what's like so powerful about when you get two individuals who are working on their relationship and working on their own personal growth at the same time, is that finally you have somebody that's like seeing you and who's in your corner sort of and is not like placating you, but is adapting a little bit, you know, because like if I go to, you know, my negative core beliefs, like, and I go to like, frick, I go play pickleball and my negative core beliefs are getting activated because those people are just there playing pickleball. You know, they're not going to be taking care of me or aware of the way in which they interact with me that might trigger them. But Tara might, you know, Tara might know that like, hey, if she says something that's critical, that it probably did set me off a little bit and that she might not just get frustrated with the fact that I'm reacting in the way, but might actually like check in with me and be like, hey, you know, when I said that thing about you, did that trigger you? Did you feel that way? And that, you know, that's like the beauty when you get two people who are actually like, I'll support you in this growth.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. I love pickleball. My husband and I are like addicted to pickleball.
EJ wishes I was addicted to pickleball.
Oh my God. Dude. No, but it's so funny. Like I go there and like I assume people don't like me. You know, it's like it's weird. Like I'm actually, it's a place where I'm very aware of my BS because I'm like, I have this whole story that this person doesn't like me. And it's like, they're just playing pickleball, for gosh sake. They could probably give a shit about me.
You need to go to the personal development school, babe.
The wildest part.
You need to take a course.
Is how much our beliefs often become self-fulfilling prophecies, which is the hardest part.
Oh my gosh,
like, because if you believe, and like this probably isn't your actual experience because you're both such likable people, but if somebody, I remember having this one client, I always think of her when I think of this, and she was so lovely. And she had four older brothers and they all gave her a hard time growing up. And she had a lot of difficulty just sort of connecting and putting herself out there. She came like full circle and ended up being amazing with this. But she would get so defensive because she was always perceiving she was going to be disliked. And so she had this huge disliked core wound, which is a common one. And then she'd tell these stories that people aren't going to like her. And I remember when we first started working together, she said, you know, I go into work and people talk to me or give me funny looks and I snap at them. And she's constantly so snappy because she's always on the defense because she's first projecting and believing that people don't like her. And then she'd always really struggle to socially adjust in workplaces because she'd always be in these, like, making these passive aggressive comments. And she told me, I remember her being like, I think I'm realizing like that these come out of the blue for somebody else. They don't realize why I'm being so hostile and harsh, but it's first because I'm assuming they don't like me. I'm feeling defensive. My guard's up. Then I become snappy. And then of course that becomes like her self-fulfilling prophecy. And so when she started to work through the wound, she realized she could like be more comfortable and safe and change her behavior. And then she started actually making friends at work. And so we see how these things tend to come full circle that way.
And in your relationship, you know, there are things I do that lead to Tara reacting in ways that validate those negative things I think about myself. Mm-hmm. And then it's just like, and then you start to feel like you're crazy because you're just like, what is going on? This is a person I love who I'm creating the same negative story with them that I do everywhere else, right?
Yeah.
So the work, Tace, it's really, like you said, it's identifying it, feeling it out, bringing in the positive, reframing it into positive beliefs, experiencing what that feels like for subconscious, like 21 days every night or when our brain's in alpha theta, and then for unconscious, like, does it really work?
It really works.
Oh my gosh.
Just for stats on this too. So we've had 60,000 people come through our programs and
You're amazing.
An NPS score on this, like what their satisfaction score was with this exercise. And we got a 99.7% NPS score with people who stuck to it for the full cycle. So anybody who actually completed, we're like, okay, you completed it. Here's your handout at the end of the completion. And then like, what did you actually score in terms of your success rate? And it's like absolutely life-changing. And this is honestly something I started doing in myself first before actually teaching and sharing about this. And like developed through a lot of my research. And the craziest part for me is I was a fearful avoidant. I had all of the core wounds. I was like everything.
Yeah.
And all day, every day, my internal dialogue was like terrible. Like just always assuming the worst, always projecting things, so defensive, so stressed out, like super spending way too much time in like sympathetic nervous system mode because constantly projecting my bears in the woods all the time. And then what was so wild is that as I did that work and worked through wound by wound, like the amount of room in my brain to like create and to learn and to be present.
Self-energy.
Just like night and day. So it's a really worthwhile exercise to start with. And there's lots of other pillars for healing your attachments out. Like there's those five other ones still, but that's a really good first pillar and place to start.
Oh my God, I love this.
Yeah.
In a way, it kind of reminds me, I'm a huge fan of IFS work, internal family systems, and getting all your like little self energy back, but just still accepting all the parts of you. Like there's no bad parts, but because we tend towards that negative bias that like, that's like, I always say like our brain's like a Google search engine. Like we don't put in like, why am I so freaking awesome? it would turn up blank pages. But when you're like, why am I not enough? Why am I insignificant? It's like, bam, 100 pages right there. Right. And that we have to intentionally do, like you said, 10 memories. Like we do this cognitive restructuring technique where like you have to come up with 10 memories of where the wound comes from, but then experience it somatically when you're hearing it back, like you are enough, you are safe, you can handle this, we can handle this. Like we have couples do that shared experience together in our room. And it's like, you just see the melting of it. Like, but then they forget, right? At the first sign of conflict, they're like, forget. And it's like, so it feels like this is a way where it actually, like you said, starts to build those new neural networks.
Yeah.
Because if you just do it a couple of times, it doesn't stick. It's not sticky.
Yeah.
It's like a pasta across the wall and it just drops.
So we sort of just scratched the surface, right? But you gave us a great like framework and one really practical tool. Can you tell us the story of a young woman who was fearful avoidant, coming out of addiction and worked through this and how your relationship changed and the way that you give and receive love now as a result of the work you've done?
Yeah, definitely. So The first thing is that I don't think I even would have gotten into a relationship if I didn't do a lot of core wound work before meeting my husband. Like, I was just triggered by everything all the time. So I think the pre-work was that before meeting him, I had worked through a lot of core wounds already and was just like way more regulated as a result. So that was the first pillar that was really big. The next pillar was the needs pillar. So I always believe that, like, there's a great Gabor Mate quote. He says, trauma are the things that did happen that shouldn't have happened, but it's also things that didn't happen that should have happened. And, you know, to me, I break that into the what happened that shouldn't have happened is your core wounds. See, somebody was abusive. Okay, you made it mean I'm unsafe, I'm helpless. But it's also maybe you didn't get, like, if you look at a dismissive avoidant, they didn't get enough attunement. They didn't get enough presence from their caregivers, like, presence with a CE, not like gifts. You know, there's things that we didn't get access to that we needed to be, to feel whole, to feel safe, to feel secure. Right. And so that next pillar, and I spent a lot of time on this one, was like listing out all the things I didn't feel like I had access to in childhood and needed. And then really became like, I'm going to meet this in myself to like the nth degree. And so, it, you know, some of it was like safety. I did a lot of nervous system regulation that would help me feel safe and comfortable within myself. A lot of it was things like validation. And because I was so mean to myself in my internal dialogue. And so I started every day, just like acknowledge my three wins on a daily basis. Presence and attunement. Okay. So every day I would like sit in my body, check in with how I'm feeling, what am I needing, like, and actually have these rituals that were allowing me to really fill through repetition and emotion across 21 day cycles so that I could actually meet these needs. And it became my new set point or baseline. And that allowed me to feel, because what's really interesting in relationships is that we always project onto people the responsibility of needs that we can't self-source, and it puts extraneous pressure on the relationship. So you see, for like an anxious person, they struggle to self-source validation or reassurance. So they're like, my partner needs to be validating me all the time, right? And so we have to learn to give to ourselves what we didn't get. And that makes room for interdependence. It makes room for us to self-source, but also then lean on others and have both sides rather than one or the other. So I spent a lot of time doing that too. And then a lot of time regulating my nervous system. So before I met my husband, I had come like a really long way, but there were still like parts of me that didn't know how to like take up space or communicate my needs. And that those are the next pillars, is like boundaries and communication of needs, like taking what you know you need and actually being able to share it. And so it's funny because I remember like literally so vividly, like this had to be like 11 years ago or so. I remember we were in the car one day and I was picking him up. He had to take his car in. I was picking him up and from work to drop him at his house. And then I was going to head to work myself. And I was like, it was this whole thing where I was waiting for him and I was getting so frustrated because I was going to be late to work. And I thought I was like doing this favor. Mm-hmm. And I remember being in the car and I called him and he didn't answer. And I didn't want to feel like I had to keep calling him or something like that. I felt like, hey, I'm doing a favor. Like he should come and be available. And I remember he got in the car and I waited and I knew at that point I was going to be 5 minutes late to work. And I remember feeling so mad, like just so mad. And it was the first time I felt like kind of really triggered again. And we've been dating for a little while. And I remember being like, okay, what I would do in the past is like just get angry and just push away and say like, this is so unacceptable. That's so rude. I can't believe this. And like criticize. But knowing that like that wasn't productive. And knowing that in that moment, like, okay, this is a chance to break this cycle and to communicate with vulnerability. And just saying, and I just remember saying, it was so vivid for me because I had like never communicated needs growing up. I had never shared openly in relationships. I just didn't even, it wasn't even on my like awareness to do so. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was wearing it so vivid, like I had this red shirt on and I remember being like, hey, I'm having a really hard time right now not making this mean that I was disrespected because I'm trying to do a favor and it feels like, you know, you were kind of doing your own thing and talking to people on the way out of work and it doesn't feel like it was fair to my time and I'm feeling really hurt. And I remember saying like, I want to like kind of push you away, but I would rather talk it out and like try to have a conversation. And I remember like he turned around and responded so well to that. And was like, I am so sorry. Like I lost track of time. I should have been more aware. Like, I really apologize. Like, I really respect you. And like, I don't want to make you feel like that. Like, thank you for picking me up. And I just remember like all that feeling just melting away.
Yes.
And being like, oh my gosh, this is way better. Why didn't I always do this? and practicing that and you know, practicing like every time. And I always say to people, behind every like criticism, there's just a need that we have
yes.
that needs to be acknowledged. And so you know, I practiced that a lot in relationships every time. And I'd done a lot of somatic work at that point. So by the time I was feeling angry or frustrated, I could kind of witness it and get present with it and do something more productive with it. And with less core wounds, I wasn't getting so triggered like I had in the past. But yeah, I mean, I guess over time, like really plugging into all those pillars and practicing until those became the new normal, like I guess 11 years later to tell the story, I'm honestly so happy in my relationship. Like I feel kind of, I don't want to seem like arrogant for saying that, but just it's so crazy to me because when I was a kid, I was like, I am never getting married. I'm never having children. I'm never investing in anything like that. Relationships are crazy. Why do people bother? And I just had such a negative view of like relationships, of I had a lot of work to do, honestly, around men. I had a lot of wounds from my dad that I had to really work through. And like, that's the craziest thing ever to me now. Like I like love men and know that women and men need each other. Like I have such a healthy view of that. And I just, I think it's worth doing the work, I guess I would say.
I love that arc, because that arc is like, I went from somebody who did not believe in relationships to somebody who has an amazing one and sees what an immense value there is in them. And that's huge.
And also, Thais, because I think so many people, especially to the point where they come right for counseling, it's like we're uniquely broken. But like you just said, it's a skill that you practice. Like it is not in our body to be like, oh my gosh, I feel really hurt and disrespected by this, right? It is our...
You hurt me. You shouldn't have done that.
And so just for people listening, like this is, it's skills building. It's awareness building, skills building. It doesn't happen overnight. We can't just read each other's mind. We can't just respond with vulnerability when we don't know how to quite be vulnerable ourselves. And I'm just thinking about all that work you did to get to that place where you could actually share with Graham, I'm having a really hard time right now. Like, and then he gets to respond heart to heart instead of like, oh, now I have to defend myself because I hurt you. And I just really want people to hear it's skills.
That's awesome.
But to reinforce that it doesn't happen overnight, Thais, right? But that you have found ways to really, I don't want to say fast track it, but to identify it sooner and then give the tools, I guess.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of that, let's, if people are hearing this and they're into it and they want to learn more, like Thais, how do they get to know you more? How do they find you?
Yeah. So I am at the Personal Development School. So it's personaldevelopmentschool.com. And there's a free attachment quiz there. And then also on YouTube, which is Thais Gibson, Thais Gibson-Personal Development School, and on Instagram at the Personal Development School. And we're just starting our podcast back up again. We had been doing repurposed YouTube episodes, so we'll have a podcast called the Thais Gibson Podcast as well in the future. So lots of resources out there.
Great. We will link all of that in our show notes. And it's been a great,
awesome.
You have an immense amount of knowledge and also like the felt sense of using it all. So thank you, Thais. It has been a pleasure to get to know you a little bit and to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me. I so appreciate it.
Thank you for all of your research, for all of the work that you do to support individuals and couples in relationships, which impact families, communities, the world. Really, like you're awesome. Like, and for to be 35 and have this much knowledge and like passion for what you're doing is incredible. Cause that's what's magnetic, right? Like we're super passionate about our couples counseling and people are like, how do you love couples counseling so much? I'm like, I just know. Like that is like your jam. Like you are so passionate when you speak about it. Like we could probably have had a 10-hour podcast. So thank you for all that you do. Again, please plug in all the stuff in the show notes. As always, take care of yourself. Take care of each other. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Me and you just singing on the train. Me and you listening to the rain. Me and you, we are the same. Me and you have all the fame we need. Indeed, you and me, are we?